traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here, your host for Flying Turns, part of the great International Equine Network. And of course, with me, the founder of IENTV.org, or dot, what is it, Scott Miller? Dot org or dot com?
Well, go ahead.
Is it IENTV.com?
Dot org.
It is
the
dot
original.
Org. Okay. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
the original.
The only one. And I got to compliment you, Scott. I've been on the website. I hope a lot of other listeners are, because it's jam-packed with great stuff. You got races from, I saw, was it England and Ireland and all over the globe.
Yeah, we sure do. We got horse shows. We got harness racing, thoroughbred racing, and the sales. We got the sales coming up from Australia next week live. Got everything. But it's
gotta
my understanding, Steve.
Yes.
That have you moved to the Meadowlands yet? The action's so good up there, I thought you might be moved up there.
I wish I could, because number one, they're one of the only states that allows fans at the races, so I could actually go there. And they are just chock full of major stake races, more than $1 million in purses on Saturday. And this, of course, is the major stop for the Grand Circuit. There are 8 stake races on the card, 13 races, 8 of them stake races, and they're multi dollars. And the horses' names reads like the who of harness racing greats this year. You kick off with the Miss Versatility, the open mare trot for 40,000, and there's the return of Manchego. I think Atlanta got a week off, so I guess they're trading. Atlanta lets Manchego win the $40,000 races, and Atlanta comes back after a rest and wins the $170,000 races.
Yeah.
But then in the very next race, which is $250,000, the third race, the Telvin Miller Memorial, the 3-year-old trotting fillies, you've got the unbeaten Sorella, who's been the hot one. This is a filly, of course, for trainer Nancy Tactor. She's 3 for 3. She has a record of 150-2 already taken at the Meadowlands. But it's not a cakewalk. There's 11 fillies in that race, including last year's 2-year-old winner, Dan Patch winner, Ramona Hill, and Hypnotic AM from the Marcus Melander stable. I mean, these are top fillies for the Oaks. But the word is that Sorella or Hypnotic AM, depending on maybe on who wins on Saturday, is going to be headed to the Hamiltonian to race against the boys.
Oh, that's going to be a tough one. But you know what, Steve? I think we've got an unusual group of fillies and mares this year that can take that. And, you know, standardbreds in and out. They are conditioned to do that, and I think we might have a couple that could go in there and win it like we had Atlanta did a few years ago.
Absolutely right. I mean, it takes a tough filly to be able to go against the boys, but if they're on a roll like Sorella is, and unlike thoroughbreds, I mean, they can race, you know, 5-6 weeks in a row before they really need a rest because they're so well conditioned, especially with the COVID-19 situation, that these horses couldn't race early on, so they kept them in top shape. They didn't train them as hard, but they have them conditioned with miles underneath them, miles and miles of jogging. So these horses are ready to race, and they're fit as can be. But then after then you look at the fourth race at the Meadowlands. It's $142,000 division of the Stanley Dancer for the Colts. And we're going to see the debut of Real Cool Sam along with Amigo Hall, two of the top 2-year-old trotting Colts, two of the top 3-year-olds for this year. And they're going to head off against each other. The next race is another division of that, but not the names. I mean, names will be made in this race, the second division. They're not as familiar as the other ones.
Do you think the virus might have changed training a little bit to maybe next year they'll think about training like they did this year going into the season next year?
You're a good point, Scott, and I totally agree with the idea of getting foundation miles under these horses. Now, a two-year-old turning three is going to have hopefully a decent growth spurt, so you really can't work them like you would a four-year-old or older horse. But that being said, you still can hold off a little bit, let them have their jogging miles, let them build a foundation so that when they ask them for speed, it's just going to fly out of them. And I think we're seeing that this year because of the delays in racing of COVID-19. And these horses are coming back super strong, super sound, and they're flying the first race out of the box. They're going in 51, 52. And I'm talking trotters and pacers. Pacers, the three-year-old colt pacers have all been going in 148 already this year. So who knows what the Meadowlands pace, which we're getting up to, is gonna go in this year. But before that, go ahead.
You might be right with that, Steve, because if it wasn't, you would have a difference, you know, in times. But if they're both equally, you know, setting, you know, fantastic times and records, then you're right. You're spot on there.
Yeah, I mean, it could be two horses battling it out, and a third one who happens to be rated properly coming on to steal the show. But that's why we race them, and that's what we're going to see. Let's keep going at the Meadowlands. I'm only up to the sixth race. That's going for $194,000. The Mistletoe Chalet for three-year-old fillies got 11 in that race, and that's headlined by JK's First Lady, who's superbred pacing filly, going against Lion Sentinel, who is the two-year-old Dan Patch Filly of the Year. She actually got beat in her first start, but again, her first start, they went in 151-4. Then the seventh race at the Meadowlands is the William Houghton Memorial. That's for $400,000. And you've got some of the best pacers in racing. Backstreet Shadow, who's been beating everybody. None Better A from Australia's made over 56,000. Best in Show, who's a great standout. Century Pharaoh, Filibuster Hanover. I mean, Dancing Lou, American History. They're all top horses going against each other. Then the eighth race, we have a little distance in here. It's the Hamiltonian Maturity, and that's a trot for four-year-olds. Goes at a mile and an eighth. And in there is Hamiltonian winner Forbidden Trade. He's going to take on, there's actually 13 horses in that race at a mile and an eighth. But also in there, the number one rated harness horse of the year in post 13 is Gimpanzee. He's 3-for-3. He's been a monster.
Well, Steve, how's this all going to play out for the rest of the season? But is this going to be an unusual time that, they have a series of races that they meet at, or will they meet somewhere else down the line?
Of course, these stakes are being jammed up. They would have been held a little bit earlier. Horsemen would have been able to pick and choose as opposed to being sort of forced to go into these races. But if you're going to race in the Hamiltonian, if you want to race on Hamiltonian Day, which is only a couple weeks away, whether you're an age pacer like Chartnen, we'll get to her later, or if you're a All-Wag Hanover, who's the favorite in the Meadowlands pace on Saturday, you've got to keep in shape. If you're a Hamiltonian contender, if you're one of the three-year-old trotting fillies we talked about that's going to maybe take on the boys or just go into Hamiltonian Oaks, you've got to, you've got to get tested. You've got to make sure your horse is ready. And this is a big test. I mean, The Meadowlands Pace is the ninth race on Saturday at the Meadowlands, $636,000. And as we said, just looking at them, you have Allway Hanover, 148. Tall Dark Stranger last week, 147-4. Captain Midnight, 149-3. Major Betts, 149. Captain Kirk, 149-3. I mean, look at these sensational miles. And they're doing them early. I mean, the most starts of any horse in the Meadowlands Pace Final is four. And in harness racing, that's not that many. But these horses are tuned up and ready to go. Two starts, they have a record of 149. It's I want to say unconscionable, but it's happening. So if Allway Hanover and a Tall Dark Stranger get into a dogfight, I mean, they're both unbeaten. They've shown dramatic speed. Then somebody like a Captain Kirk or Catch the Fire is going to sneak up and win it all. And I mentioned Catch the Fire because harness driver Mike Wilder, who's one of the top drivers at the Meadows, he's coming to the Meadowlands just to drive this horse. And the Meadowlands Pace is the first time he's ever been in it. But again, if these horses go horrendous fractions, which they could, then somebody could come up from behind, and who knows, the race could go in 147 flat.
A better's delight, I would say. Let me ask you this. You just said you've got a guy coming in from outside. New York just imposed on the thoroughbred jockeys that you, the only jockeys that can race and ride at Saratoga are in-house. You're there for the duration. Nobody's allowed in or out.
Well, that's...
Are they doing that with the drivers?
No. There was some talk about it early on, but then it was ended. Plus, a lot of the drivers have gotten corona testing. And I think if they show a certificate that says they do not have the virus, then they're fine for 30 days. It's almost like a Coggins test for horses. And I agree with that. If you take a blood test and you can show in less than 30 days that you were tested and do not have the virus, then you should be able to ride or race at the any track. I mean, how much more can you have?
Yeah, you can't do any more than that, you know. So was just kind of interesting. Now, what time are the races on at the Meadowlands?
Meadowlands starts, sure they might have an earlier post here. They're starting at 6:30 because I know they're going to have time in between the races. So many stake races going on. So, they start at 6:30. Then I have to tell you, there's the Billy Houghton Memorial for $120,000. This is a free-for-all. And in it are Delta, a winner in Sintra. What do you call it? The G Joe Trump Nation. I mean, these are top pacers going at it. There's also the Dottie Houghton free for all for pacing mares. And as I said earlier, Chartnen is back. She's unbeaten, only two starts this year. She had a gravel in her foot, which was taken care of the last 2 weeks. She's, you know, in prime shape. But again, she's going against Kissing in the Sand and her arch rival, Caveat Alley. And they've been going in 147-4, 148. So Chartnen's really going to get tested. But as Jim King says, she's sharp and ready to go. So she's already shown us last year that she can go 146-4. Now, whether she'll have to go that fast again or close to it, you know, remains to be seen. We'll see that soon. But that's all the major stake races at the Meadowlands, which is only the Hamiltonian card will be able to beat this.
Yeah, and you think that this could line up again next year like this?
I don't think so. I really think they're going to want to spread it out a little bit, because what's happening is, instead of going to sire stake races and stuff, these top 2-3 year old horses are are gearing up just for these big races at the Meadowlands. Granted, they can go on an off week or something to a Pennsylvania Sire Stakes to try and get points. But, and granted, the Sire Stakes is important because they're going to have $250,000 finals at the end of the season. But right now, you got to concentrate on the Grand Circuit. That's where the money is. And because it's less racing opportunities this year, and hopefully if your horse stays sound, you've got to go for the big bucks. There's no question about
it. So what you're saying is that if all of our listeners and go to IENTV.org, click on the Meadowlands, they can watch one of the best race days at the Meadowlands, and it might be a one-time only deal.
I don't want to say that because it's only going to get tougher as it goes, and the races are still going to be there. Who knows how many on Hamiltonian Day. I actually was at the Meadowlands in the old building right before it closed and moved next door. I was at that last card in the Meadowlands. They had 14 races that day, and 12 of them were stake races. Because I remember I had to write 12 short stories on each of the stake races, and that was an unbelievable card. In fact, it was really befitting because in the very last race, the person who's won the most money, won the most races at the Meadowlands. I mean, he was a sure bet, and he went off at 7-2 odds. A guy by the name of John Campbell wins the very last race in the old Meadowlands, which I thought was very befitting back then, and an easy win ticket. But, Scott, we've got more stuff to go over here. I know you've got a ton of stuff. Let me jump ship and talk about a gentleman by the name of Scott Robbins. And if you're from the Chicago area, you're going to remember Scott Robbins because it was around 21 years ago that he was one of the top drivers on the Hawthorne Racecourse, Maywood Park, Balmoral, the Illinois racing circuit. And he did very well. But then he hung up his colors. I haven't been able to find out a reason why, but after 21 years, I think the last time he drove was in September of 1999. He actually was going through closets, found his old colors, this is a year ago, and made a decision that he wanted to drive again. So he started getting back in shape, and just this week, he came back, wore his original colors, he got to fit in them again, and in the first race he competed in, he won at Hawthorne Racecourse.
Oh, man.
But can you imagine a jockey hanging up his stirrups? And then coming back after 21 years?
Yeah, I couldn't imagine any athlete of any sport, you know, taking a
21-year hiatus. That's what it is. And returns to racing and wins and still fits in his colors.
Is he driving a lot of races? Is he driving a lot of races?
Well, he had four races on Wednesday and won the first one he was in, and then he was in a couple qualifiers yesterday. I have to look and see if he's racing, but if you follow the sport, you go to Hawthorne Racecourse and look him up, and it was just an interesting story. But now we're going to
get him on the radio.
There you go. I'll see if we can do that, and that way we can ask him the questions directly. We need to go overseas a little bit because there is, as people should be aware, harness racing. It's the biggest sport, almost the biggest, the most wagered on sport in France. Between the harness and thoroughbreds, they do unbelievable numbers. Nothing in harness racing in the United States can compare to what Vincennes handles. I mean, I was there for the Prix de Mourique at the end of February in the cold weather. It was sunny. And they handled $41 million on the card that day. It was just unbelievable. I think $12.5 million on the Prix de Mourique race itself. But in thoroughbreds, you can't even compare that to the Derby or the Belmont or Preakness, where they get into the hundreds of millions. But for harness racing, it's pretty good. But over in Sweden, where it's tough for any horse to win two races in a row, There is a top trotter by the name of Incuri D, who now is on an 11-race win streak. And he
11?
Is 11 in a row he's 11. Won. Unbeaten this year. Because in Sweden, they kept racing.
That's
they never
unheard
stopped
of.
It.
That's unheard
yeah, well,
of.
It is in the Swedish circuit, because that's as tough as the, you know, as the French one. And Bjorn Goop is the driver of this horse, and he just won another major stake. I believe he's made about $180,000 already this year. Now, and there's a lot more races coming up if he can, you know, stand for it. But 11 in a row on the Swedish racing circuit is very, very tough.
Now would he have a chance to come to the States? Or I really, you know, been thinking about
here's
a lot
situation
of the
with the foreign. Here's the situation with the foreign horses. It's the tax bracket that crushes everybody. In other words, if a horse comes from anywhere other than North America, he can come back and forth from Canada and race all he wants, that's fine. But a horse that comes from Europe, he's going to get taxed differently. I mean, he just can't come here. He can come here and win one race, maybe two, and then head back to Europe. But after that second race, he's going to get taxed twice as much as normal. And then he's going to hit that 25% here in the United States, the owners and everyone. So if they are going to make a decision to race here, they have to realize the tax ramifications. That's why a horse like a Bold Eagle, who came here last year and wowed everybody, went in the Breeders' Crown, and then he was going to come back here and race for a while, probably because he could go on Lasix. But now, because of the coronavirus, he wasn't coming back. But, you know, everyone thought, well, he should stay and race, you know, in the Yonkers International. But apparently after that second start, he may win. If he were to win it and get the $500,000, he's going to have to kick back a minimum of 25% of that. So, I mean, purse-wise, that adds up a little bit. You know, to give a quarter of your earnings away just because you're racing the United States.
Well, you know, one thing I think this virus has caused is it's made the industry, all of the horse industry, show horses and thoroughbreds, standardbred, had to get their product out for distribution. You know, it's very important that they get to, you know, out to the public. And I think they're doing that now, because I'm starting to see a lot of European racing, you know, from standardbreds available, you know, at different sites, so that you can watch them, and they're live too, you know.
Yeah,
almost every
racetrack. If you go, of course, on Twin Spires, you're going to get most of those racetracks. But most of the racetracks are also have their own venue you can watch the races. It's really a great technological age, you know. Depending on what track is your favorite, you should be able to get them one way or the other on TV. Now, before we sort of switch to the thoroughbreds and other disciplines of the horse industry, I do have to mention there was a terrible accident last week at Clinton Raceway in Ontario, Canada. And a harness driver, Dave Jackson, he was critically injured in the accident. And they have now set up a GoFundMe page. He's still in the intensive care unit up in the Clinton Hospital. But anyone that goes to Harness Link and goes to the Canadian page, they'll see the GoFundMe set up for Dave Jackson. And hopefully everybody will take a minute and send some bucks his way, because he's going to have hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills coming up.
You know, Steve, a lot of people don't understand that in the horse industry, that there aren't funds and there aren't things, you know, set up for drivers, trainers, grooms, you know, what have you, that would get hurt. And so it's, you know, it's crucial that people go to that GoFundMe, you know, to help him out, because his livelihood literally has stopped. you know.
Exactly. And, you know, there's medical coverage, but usually it's only 80%. And when you've had a serious accident like Dave was in, he's going to be he's going to have hundreds of thousands of dollars in bills, probably more than $1 million before he can ever get out of the hospital. So, yes, absolutely. If anyone has a moment, they should go and send them $25 or whatever you can afford. It's going to be greatly appreciated. But now I got to ask you, what's going on here? A verdict came down against Bob Baffert?
Right. Yeah. What happened was that back at the hot springs meet at Oakland, he had Charlatan that won the Arkansas Derby and Gamey won an allowance race that went on to win the Acorn at Belmont. They tested positive for lidocaine, and Bob's going to he's going to appeal that decision, but the suspension starts on August the 1st, and it's a 15-day suspension. With all the money, all the purse money will be redistributed down to the horses, you know, that finish second, third, you know, to last place. And also the Derby points will be divided up between all the horses in the race. So depending on where you finish, you know, you might get you a couple of Derby points.
Now, if Bob Baffert appeals the verdict from the Racing Commission, what happens then?
Well, he'll appeal it. It's highly unlikely that the appeal will go through. I think it's more of a, you know, just a business procedure. You know, you got to exhaust every effort to your owners, you know, to retain that money, you know, for your owners and you know, yourself. And,
right, but
you know,
will he be able to
overturn it? Because
Able to continue training during the appeal process?
The process will go on, you know, it'll go on. As far as saddling horses are concerned, it depends on each state. I doubt that, you know, he'll go try to saddle any horses or, you know, cause any, you know, difficulties by trying to do that. You know, so it would be up to each individual. And, of course, you know, the way the virus is, you know, he's not traveling a lot. You know, there's just so many things there, you know, that could happen. But I think he'll appeal it. I don't think they'll overturn it. You know, he'll just take his 15 days.
Right, because when we talked last week, it was a split sample. So the second sample, which went to another different lab, also came up positive.
Right, exactly. Basically, what they were saying is that it came through contamination. And I think that's what, you know, that's the one that bit it, you know, through contamination. You'd have to, you know, ingest a lot of, you know, product to get those type of readings that they got. You know,
right. I mean, and there has been cases where things have legitimately been, whether it's a feed contamination or anything like that. But I would say in 95% of the cases, or even higher, maybe 98%, the person's guilty. And whether it's, you know, a veterinarian or the stable itself just gave the medication without thinking of how many hours or days to be out of the box, you know, before it could race, and just got caught.
Well, the lidocaine issue, you have to pull, it takes 72 hours to get out of the horse's system for lidocaine. And, you know, it tested fairly positive. So, you know, that was an interesting case. And it's kind of one of those things that, you know, sometimes it's just better to bite the bullet, you know, and keep on going, because now, you know, with Bob, he's got horses coming up for the Derby and for the Preakness and for the Breeders' Cup. And I was just looking here today at, you know, how it's going on. We got the Haskell tomorrow at Monmouth Park. it drew seven horses in there. And Authentic is one of Baffert's horses. He's the 4-5 favorite. And then Dr. Post, it ran in the Belmont, ran second. He's the 5-2 second choice. So, you know, that's going to be a very interesting, you know, move, you know, from him, you know, to go through with what he's
right. Now, tell us, is the law still headed for the Travers?
Yeah, he's going to the Travers, and that's interesting, you know, because right now, it's conceivable that any horse that wins the Haskell on Saturday could turn right around and run in August 8th in the Travers. So, you know, that the Travers could be really loaded up, you know, for Tis the Law. And then with him being on the August 8th schedule, literally every 4 weeks there is a major Derby prep race. Every 4 weeks, a major Derby prep race, and that takes them all the way up to the Breeders' Cup. So literally, you would be going from August the 8th and the Travers, September 5th, the Kentucky Derby, October the 3rd, the Preakness, and November 7th, the Breeders' Cup at Keene. And that's tough road for the Thoroughbred to go.
Yeah, that's a long, grinding task to keep him in shape and hope he doesn't go take a bad step and go lame or anything. Or if God forbid he does, they've got a few weeks to get him in shape, you know, to race. But that's an awesome schedule where he's going to – how much is the Derby going for this year?
I think it's right at $3
million. $3 million. How about the Travers? Do we know what that goes for? Is that a million?
The Travers is going to be right at a million. You know, all of these races are right at a million. For example, the Haskell tomorrow. It's a good race. It's a light field set. You know, and a lot of trainers said, should they go for the Haskell, you know, and hope to catch a lot light field, which they think they might be doing tomorrow on that. And so I was kind of excited to see, you know, what in the heck's going to happen with them. And then, you know, I looked up at it. It's $1 million at the Haskell tomorrow.
Every race, that's unbelievable. More than
$1 million. Yeah, and they're all going like that. And this top race down. And all the races coming up, they go anywhere from $1 million to $3 million to $5 million in the classes. And, you know, you're sitting here looking at just in the Haskell tomorrow, $600,000 to the winner, you know.
That makes the whole season right there.
Yeah, $200,000 to second, you get 40 points for the Derby, $100,000 to third, and you get 20 points, $50,000 to fourth, you get 10 points, $30,000 to fifth, you know, and no Derby points, and $12,500. From six to last place.
Do they six and seven divide up to 12-5 or?
No, they each get 12-5.
Oh, they each wow.
Yeah, each one gets 12-5, and you know it makes a big difference, you know, when you're racing like that and going from.
No, it's incentive to come in, figuring, you know, if you don't do that well, you're still going to get a nice chunk of the pie.
Oh yeah, you know you have to you know do the best you can. But you know the other interesting fact is that this is all road to the Kentucky Derby, and you know it makes it kind of interesting. What is going to be the most important here for the owners and the trainers? You know, how are you going to get the horses to the Derby? What races are you going to run? The Haskell, you know, the Travers or whatever. But more importantly, right now, with this being an odd year and the rhythm of the Triple Crown being all broken up as it's playing out, you got to ask yourself, what are you going to point your horse for? Do you want to win the Derby? Do you want to win the Preakness? Did you want to win the Belmont, Travers, the Haskell? You know, or win as many of them as you can and then win the Classic. What's going to put the most value on your horse? As a stallion, as a potential stallion. You know, the Derby's out of sync. The Preakness is out of sync. The Belmont was kind of like on track, but it was, you know, a mile and a half, prior to all the other races. So I think that's what a lot of owners are looking at now. You know, what do we do? If Tensilaw were to go through and win like he's been winning and win all those races up, including the Classic, he would be one of the greatest horses of all times to ever run.
That's for sure. I mean, just the purses he's racing for, would just one of them would make a whole season for any horse. And he's got opportunity, if he stays sound, to race in hopefully all of them. Because you're right, that would make him the horse of the year for sure.
Right. And you know, the whole long and short of it is about the purse money for the thoroughbreds is, you know, you can run and run seconds and thirds and end up with $1 million in earnings at the end of the year. You know, it's not that difficult to do, you know, if you select the right races. And now this virus has got the trainers thinking, you know, where do we go and how do we do it? You know, it's an awful tough on the trainers, you know, because you got to go to the owner and say, well, this is the path that we're taking to get where we're going. And all of a sudden, is it the Derby that becomes so important, or is it the Classic? And if it's the Classic, it's a whole different ball game. If it's the Derby, it's cut and dry. It's three races, and, you know, and then you go from there.
Well, I know that looking at a purse of $3 million, I'm going to get my horse ready for the Derby, and I'd race him in non-winners of two someplace just as a prep.
I know. Well, see, that's the other thing, too. There's a lot of racing secretaries, you know, talking to a lot of trainers saying, hey, what kind of prep race do you want us to write for you, you know, to get you here before the Derby? You know, that type
correct
of thing. You know, but it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how this
right
all plays out.
Scott, if you've got a horse that's, you know, eligible and you're considering putting him in the Derby, are you going to, you know, whatever race he's going to have next in that 3 to 4 week time period, are you going to send him right to Churchill and let him work there as opposed to, you know, a week before the race and try and get him acclimated?
You know, that's interesting that you say that. Most of these horses, Steve, have had a go at the Churchill track. Just because of the way things were bouncing around. You know, either as a 2-year-old or as a 3-year-old, you know, they've been there. The best thing to do is not get out of sync. Now, like Barkley tied with Tensilaw, this is interesting for him. He got him straight up to Saratoga because that's his home base. And so, you know, he'll run in the Traverse. He'll probably stay at Saratoga until, you know, 2 or 3 days before the Kentucky Derby. And the reason I say that is because of weather conditions. The weather conditions in Saratoga at the end of August are starting to get cool, keeps the horses, you know, fresh,
right,
exciting, invigorating. You know, and in September at Churchill, you know, you can get 90 and 100-degree days. And, you know, so that becomes a key focus on what do they do, where do they go. A lot of the trainers like to get there for the owners to get into the hoopla of Derby week, which is not going to be like a normal Derby week. It's just going to be
right
a regular, you know, work week.
I mean, right now, are there going to be fans allowed? Do we know that this far in advance?
Well, they're trying to figure that out now, you know, how they're going to work it, how they could work it. And the way the social scene is, you know, a lot of owners would like to be there. You know, they can have, you know, the suites, the owner's suites could literally, you know, take, you know, 6 to 10 people or what have you, you know, and be okay. But it's something that we haven't talked about, you know, in the past. And this is going to, and I pray to God that nothing happens. the way the things are out in the public with the protesting, you know, and the violence, and especially in Louisville, you know, you've got to think about a lot of things when you get there. How are you going to protect the horsemen, the horses, and anybody that goes to church?
I've been to Churchill, not for the Derby. I was there for the Breeders' Cup, and they only had like 80,000 people, not 120,000. But still, jammed. And with the virus and everything, all I can remember was going in the press box to see some people that I know and how there were 75, 80 people, maybe more, maybe as close to 100 in and out of that press box area. And I just wonder how the hell they're going to be able to handle that, you know, with the virus.
Well, yeah, you know, that's another thing that a lot of people don't realize is when you start thinking about all the support staff that goes into, you know, having the Kentucky Derby, the parking attendants, the food vendors, the television, the newspaper, the veterinarians, the transporting people. You know, it's just a phenomenal amount of people that you have involved that have to interact with each other. You know, unfortunately.
Sure. How about when I went there and I luckily only a couple blocks away, I was able to park on a lady's lawn for only
$10. Yeah. See that the virus hurts that income because years ago when I was real young and we first started going to the Derby, there was a lady over there that we parked at, her and her husband, they were elderly. And they told us it was $5 to park. And then she said, if you wanted to have a hamburger, potato salad, coleslaw, and a drink, and her son would wash your car for you, that was $10. And everybody just went right to her, you know, and the car was safe. And, you know, it was fantastic. But, you know, you're right about that. Now, you got to think about all those things. You know, how do you interact? How do you get back and forth? Going through the turnstiles is another thing. You got every time a person goes through and touches that turnstile, are they going to disinfect that turnstile?
I'm sure they've gone through the plans already, and hopefully they'll be able to have at least whether it's 25% or 50%. I don't think they could have 50% occupancy because that could be 60,000 people.
Oh yeah, well you know actually when you look at it, if you were to put the boxes sit 4 seats in each box there at Churchill, and it's close quarters. But if you went every 2 boxes there, that would be more than the 6-foot difference, you know, that you need for the social, distancing. So, you know, you could do a lot of, put a lot of people in there, but then it goes back again to what about the restrooms and the vendors and, you know, the wagering and, you know, how do you control that?
It can be mind-boggling thinking of all the scenarios that they have to be prepared for, but I mean that's what they've got to do. I mean, the idea of not having any fans there, of it being fanless racing, it just I don't know. I mean, you want to be able to let people there, but then if they do reduce it dramatically, how much are tickets going to go for?
Exactly. See, that's another thing. Who would be able to, you know, possibly afford doing that, you know, to do that? And then the other thing is that you got to think about is, having said all what we've said about people going and coming and all like that, you got to think about the Preakness. You know, you're looking at the Preakness 30 days later, you know, and how many people might come out of Churchill, not saying that there any would, but how many would come out of Churchill that might test positive over the next 2 weeks, you know, going on to the Preakness?
No, you just can't. And I'm sure the people at Churchill Downs are going through whatever scenarios they want to try and get forward on. And it's not going to be an easy task. And obviously, you know, they'll have tons of money bet on it, but it's not going to be the same as a regular Derby day.
Right. Well, you know, like right now I'm sitting here and we're doing our show and everything, and I'm watching Saratoga Live on IENTV.org. And they're doing a real good job of it. The announcers are fantastic. You know, they're doing it. They're
But they're racing with no fans, Scott?
Right, no fans.
And, no fans.
You know, it's really good. You can see the protocol. The jockeys all have the mask on, the outriders, the lead ponies, the gate personnel, the veterinarians. You know, they've got it going, and they know what they're doing. You know, and it's really making it interesting, you know, to see that it can work, you know, if they have the right program going. And so far, you know, it's successful. I've been on the second race now, and, you know, it's going pretty smooth.
Well, it remains to be seen. I guess we're going to know in the upcoming, you know, weeks or within a month or less, what the status will be in Churchill Downs for the Derby and what the status is for the other tracks. Right now, Monmouth Park and Meadowlands are doing the right thing, and they're able to have racing and they're able to have some fans there. But I guess we'll see Saturday how it goes. I mean, Gulfstream Park has been, you know, doing the fanless racing since February, since March, and they were one of the first tracks. It almost didn't skip a beat, maybe missed a week or so, and then was able to come back. But we'll have to see how it goes. I mean, because you certainly don't want any people coming down with a virus and stuff after a big race, and then they have to change all those rules, or worst case scenario, have to go with fanless racing for the Derby.
Right. Well, you know, one of the interesting things is the Breeders' Cup coming up at, you know, at Keeneland in Lexington. I think that's going to be kind of the end result of everything that's happened over the summer, because, you know, there's a possibility we could have quite a few people at Keeneland, you know, going to the races there live. You know,
if everything goes well, absolutely. But I don't think until they get a vaccine for this virus, I just don't think we're going to have a lot of events are going to have crowds. I mean, I know that, you know, horse racing is probably the biggest sport that's been able to make a totally successful return to their eventing, whether it's the rodeo, dressage or show jumping, harness racing, thoroughbred racing. I mean, you almost, other than the very beginning, you're almost not hearing about any cases of coronavirus and stuff, and that, you know, racing's been the model example of how to do it right. And whether the baseball and car racing and all these other events are following suit, but we'll see. I mean, especially hockey and basketball and baseball with no spitting. I mean, come on, that's the American dream.
That's part of it. That's part of the requirement.
That's right. You got bases loaded, two outs, a full count of 3-2, and you don't think that pitcher's going to want to spit a little bit just to get his mouth from being so dry on this pitch?
Well, you know, Steve, that's like over at Fox Lee. We had them on the show here about a month or so ago. And we've got a lot of our horses from here at Sunshine Meadows that are showing over there this weekend. And their model that they set up is fantastic. You know, and
absolutely. In fact, I saw another event, the New Jersey Pleasure Horse Association. They held their annual standardbred show, where retired standardbreds who are broken the saddle or set up to do eventing and carriages and stuff, they all performed, and they had all their social distancing, And they had a small crowd there to be able to watch, but apparently they handled it very, very well. It was a big success.
Oh, yeah. Well, over at Fox Lee, some of the, our people that have come back, they said, we might get spoiled. And I said, what do you mean spoiled? They said, everything you need, you just call. You call the show office, and they bring you your food. They bring you your water, your hay, your feed. Whatever you need, you know, for the, you know, because of the social distancing. And said they've even gone to the point to where they brought portable restrooms in and put it at the end of the barns for them. And they said, you know, we might be spoiled to expect this every time because it's really working. You know, and I said, well, you know, it depends on where you're at and who you're dealing with.
That's right. I mean, some of these places have gone out of their way. Go ahead.
One of the things that I was going to ask you earlier, it's like in the thoroughbreds, you know, whenever we go over to the paddock, you know, we've got a hot locker and a groom, you know, maybe a barn foreman or an assistant trainer and the trainer, you know, that all walk over. But with the harness, it's a little bit different, isn't it? There's a lot of, you know, warming up and a lot of things that go on. It's just not like you walk over and do anything.
No. It's not as much personnel. In other words, a groom or a caretaker can do almost everything. And in some cases, they even take the horse out and jog the horse and get it warmed up so that either the trainer or even in some cases the driver, if there's time, will get, you know, behind the horse and warm it up and, you know, go a semi-quick mile with him to make sure he's all loose and stuff. And then the groom takes over. So you're talking, you know, a trainer, a second trainer, and your caretakers are going to run, you know, a stable of 10 to 15 horses or more, people like Alani and them that can have 120. But when it comes to the paddock, there's so much going on because, like you said, horses have to warm up. They're in and out of the paddock. They've got to be bathed afterwards. They've got to be walked some and blown out, only given a little water. And then everybody, both thoroughbred and harness and show horses and the rodeo, they all have been able to social distance properly. I've hardly heard of any cases of anyone in any of the disciplines coming up positive.
Right. You're exactly right. And, you know, one of the things I think that a lot of people, they don't realize, when you're in the horse world, it's not like that you're out in the mass of 100,000 people like at a football game or, you know, basketball or what have you. Our life is pretty much contained to the barn area or the farm. It's not like we're running all over creation, you know, doing this and doing that, because we're 7 days a week. And our practices, our daily practices, I think, is what's keeping us pretty safe, you know.
Sure, and horsemen are established at their location, whether it's a racetrack, a barn area, or at a farm training facility. And the only reason they're really going to leave is either to go home to go to sleep or to go race a horse someplace else or at that track, you know, if it's whether it's daytime or night.
Right.
So you're right. When, they're not getting exposed as you would think, but then again, they're taking all the precautions. I mean, you watch horses come out for a post parade from a paddock, and you're going to see 25 people with masks on.
Yeah,
you know, they're doing the right thing.
There's another thing too that people really don't realize about what we do in the horse business is the fact that our travel is pretty much limited, you know, but yet we do go from here to Saratoga to Churchill to Keeneland, you know, to Miami or Tampa or whatever. And so we're kind of limited in what we do, you know, traveling-wise. Now, I know a lot of the harness people, you know, that I've talked to here and from knowing you over the years, a lot of times they have drivers that will drive, like, say, at Freehold or, you know, wherever and then go to somewhere else. You know, like in Thoroughbred, we used to race at Belmont or Aqueduct, and then at nighttime go over to the Meadowlands, you know, but we don't do that often, you know.
Well, that's because you can't because there isn't that many night tracks. Whereas in harness racing, there are much less, there's fewer tracks that race daytime. The Meadows right. would be one of them. Up in Quebec, the little track Three Rivers, you know, they're pretty much late at mid-afternoon or daytime tracks. And because of it, when they have their major stake races, people like Yannick Gingra and Tim Tietrich and them, Brian Sears, they're going to go there, race in those races, and then they're going to get aboard a private jet and zoom to the Meadowlands or Yonkers, you know, depending on where they want to go. There have been horsemen that raced in early races at Yonkers and then left and just drove over the bridge to the Meadowlands for the late night features.
Right, right. Yeah, you can do that. Well, let me ask you this here, not that we're getting down towards the end of the show and everything. Is there any, like on Harness Link, is there a daily or a weekly update on the coronavirus? And what should our listeners go to on Harness Link to get all the updates and the racing information and that type of thing?
Well, you can go to Harness Link. You can go to the section where there's links, which will hook you up with all the racetracks in, that are in North America, in the world, literally. You can go to any story and click on the hook and click on the link. If there should be one on the race name of the track, that'll take you right there, and you can, you know, look up and see the situation. And usually it's under horsemen. If you look up under horsemen, you'll find the condition sheets, you'll find rules and regulations, you'll find hopefully COVID-19 protocols. Almost every track has them. And there is a daily update. Standard Break Canada does push one, but most of the other websites don't have something like that. But before we sign off, because I know it's getting close, I got to remind everybody that this week the U.S. Harness Writers Association is having their bi-monthly free handicapping contest. And this week it's an easy five-horse field to pick an exacta in. And the race is going to take place. It's the 10th race at Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, all the way as far north as you can get for harness racing. And it's free to enter. And if you're one of the three winners, you're going to get a maritime prize package, which is going to be chock full. I mean, there's Blue Nose Tea, which is world renowned from Nova Scotia, and Turo Raceway, and Red Shores have put up hats and T-shirts, and even the bag that you get from with all the goodies in it is actually a transformed feed bag made into a nice shopping bag that's reusable and it's got horses on it.
Okay.
I mean, it's really, really nice. And all you have to do, folks, it's free to enter, no purchase necessary. Just go to Scott Ahlberg's Facebook page, and that's Scott Ahlberg, A-L-B-E-R-G. It'll pop right up, and you look at the field, pick the exacta, put in the numbers for your cold exacta, and then wait for the 10th race Saturday at Charlottetown. See if you can win a prize.
There you go. Now, Steve, give us that GoFundMe page again. We want to make sure that we can get that out to our listeners.
I'm getting that back up because I know it's got this special name on it, but we'll have it here in just a second. You can go to Harness Link and just look it up there. But it's as soon as my computer says go.
Yeah, it's important, you know, that we...
Yeah, the gentleman's name is Dave Jackson, and it's GoFundMe page under his name. It's Dave Jackson Fundraiser.
Uh-huh, okay.
And if you go to Harness Link, the link, and you go to the story on Harness Link about the GoFundMe set up for Dave Jackson, on that page, he'll have a link. He'll take you right to it.
You got it. You got everything on that Harness Link, Steve, and you still have time to get in and out of that pool.
Oh, yeah, I wish. I haven't been able to go in for a couple of days, but hopefully we'll do something. We'll get in there. But it's a good show again, Scott.
Yeah, I think we did good. We're trying hard. I've got a lot of new things coming up here and there. Since I can get motivated to get it done and all, and I appreciate Steve you being here with us and informing us on everything. And BBS, got to thank those guys and everybody that's involved with it. So we'll see you next Thursday, Steve.
Sounds good.